As I began to process it a little differently than where it originally started. And I wanted to go back and introduce this character because he's going to play a part when we get to the end of Elijah's life. And so I wanted to go back to chapter 19 and introduce Elisha coming in on the scene. The account of Elijah and Elisha is a story of God's grace to overcome the loneliness of service. Elijah had spent all his time assuming he was the only one who had not bowed the knee to Baal. And serving the Lord many times, it can be a lonely place. It can be that way in whether we are ministering or whether we are living our life as a believer in the world around us. But we should be thankful for a God who knows our needs and provides for them. Elijah needed Elisha, and Elisha needed Elijah. And it's been said that everyone needs a Paul and a Timothy. I wholeheartedly agree with that. It's the challenge of mentoring and being mentored that helps keep our vision fresh and our future bright. Elijah had accomplished quite a bit on his own, but now God is going to mature him in a way that would impact him personally and totally, but it would also impact Israel with a future leader of the prophets. And so this is a major, major turning point in the life of Elijah. It is no small thing to bring on someone who you mentor. It's something really that I believe we see patterned in the New Testament. It's patterned well by the Apostle Paul, by especially starting with Barnabas and the Apostle Paul. Jesus did it as he sent his disciples out. He sent them out two by two so that they would have an influence and they would have a companionship with one another. You notice even at the start of the book of Acts that you see Peter and John partnered together in service together. And so I believe it's important that we have somebody, especially a Paul and a Timothy, that we have somebody who is feeding into our lives and who is helping us and mentoring us. But I believe it's also important that we have that Timothy who we are pouring into. And it's important because we need that flow of information, that flow of teaching that goes in both directions. It's been said that the best way to learn a topic is to teach it. And I would agree with that. The more things that I have taught, that I have learned in college, and over the years, the better I know it, because you have to internalize it and then you have to push it out. And so we should never be satisfied with someone just inputting into our lives. We should never be satisfied with just sitting and, you know, in a Sunday school class setting or a small group setting and just sitting there and gleaning from it. The greatest thing that we can do is to take these points of input and to pour them out into somebody else. For instance, in Sunday school, we're looking at a discipleship curriculum. How can we learn that discipleship curriculum better? By taking it and teaching it to somebody else. One of the ways that we can develop, and I would love to see something like this happen, is to take those who would be interested in teaching or leading a small group and giving them that opportunity to sit in a small group for the purpose of learning so that they can take it out and teach it in that next cycle. What is that doing? That's maturing us. It's growing us in a way that we would not have normally grown. And so it's important that we seek out that kind of relationship within the church, a Paul and a Timothy in all of our lives. And the truth is, I want all of us to have fresh vision. I want our church to have fresh vision. I want us, as we grow in Christ, to be pouring ourselves into others. When we mentor someone, we get a fresh perspective. We begin to learn how others process the world around us. It's really easy for us to look at the world around us and to process it in light of our own thinking, right? But when you sit in a discipleship or a mentoring relationship, what do you begin to learn? You begin to see that this person that I'm pouring myself into, they're different than I am. They think differently. They see things differently. Their perspective is different. There may be a generational difference that is there, where they are younger. And I believe that's why it's so important that we don't just get caught up in our own generational groups. I don't have a struggle with ministering generationally. I think that it's okay to minister generationally, but I believe that we need to be actively pursuing cross-generational ministry. I'll say this: one of the greatest ways to learn that, and that I have learned that, is through college ministry in Indianapolis. As we began to minister to college students and students that were just graduated from high school, it was a wonderful opportunity for conversations on perspective, how this world is viewed. And it opened up conversations that were great because we could pour ourselves into these college students, yet at the same time, we can learn how culture is changing and how perspectives are changing, and that's so important for us. It keeps us young. It keeps us from becoming that old codger who stands by their door of their house and they've got their pristine lawn, and when somebody just steps into the grass, they yell out the door, "Keep off the grass!" You know, did you have that kind of grumpy old person in your neighborhood growing up? Next door. Mine was two doors down. Yes, that's exactly right. And so we don't want to be that person. I hope you don't want to be that person. Does anybody want to be that person? I don't want to be that person. And so I want us to look at this story or this account from the perspective, and so many times we just look at it from Elisha's perspective of being a servant. But I think that we need to look at it from both perspectives. I want us to look beyond where we are and see what we can be. And perhaps you've had a Paul or Barnabas in your life, but do you have a Timothy? Do you still have a Paul or Barnabas? And I remember Drew coming home from college in, I can't remember if it was his final graduation, the 2020 homeschooling. I never saw college homeschool, but you had to do it in 2020, right, to finish it out. But I can't remember if it was then or a summer before, but Drew and I were having a conversation. He said, I miss my Sunday school class at my church back in Greenville. And I said, why? He said, well, he said, we're not age segregated. He said, we have all age groups in our small group. And I really like being in that because I'm one of the youngest in there, but there are people who pour into my life and influence me. And he mentioned one gentleman in particular, and that man was 60 plus years old. But that was a man who had the most influence in his life in that small group. And it was because there was a 60-plus-year-old man who looked at a 20-year-old young man, and rather than saying, this guy is looking at the world totally wrong, he's got it all messed up, this man saw that there's a generation that needs a past generation. And he would pour his life into my son, and he would talk about raising his kids. He would talk about when he was college age, and it was a natural conversation. It wasn't somebody cornering him and you know, poking the nose in, or the finger in the nose and schooling them. It was a conversation. It was living life. It was what you would call life touching life. And so it's so important that we gain a vision for this. That is really when you look back, and perhaps we'll bring them back out again, but when you look at the cultural distinctives that I shared with us probably about a year ago, those cultural distinctives are so important. And this is part of our cultural distinctive. And so let's look at these. It's just three verses and just a couple of points. But let's look at these and gain some perspective about it. Verse 19, it says, "So he departed thence," that's speaking of Elijah, "and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 20 yoke of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed by him and cast his mantle upon him." Now, you know, we have to put ourselves back into the perspective of the day that Elijah was living in, and they didn't have big tractors, all right? They didn't have plows that they could put on the back of a tractor, so they would hook up oxen. And this had to be a massive field and a massive farm, because they were plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and Elisha was on the 12th. And so you can imagine them diagonally kind of pushing their way across that field and turning the dirt over in the field. And Elijah sees him, and he cast his mantle upon him. He didn't even stop, okay? He sees Elisha there. It says he passes by and he put his mantle on him. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Verse 20, "And he left the oxen, Elisha, and ran after Elijah and said, 'Let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow thee.' And he said unto him, 'Go back again, for what have I done to thee?'" Now, this was just an expression. Elijah realized, you know, he's just like full bore come into this situation, made it known what God's intentions are, and he just kept on going. Didn't even think about the fact that Elisha had a family that was back there. And so this wasn't Elisha having second thoughts, and this wasn't Elijah being sarcastic in his response. In essence, Elijah was saying, "Oh man, what have I done to your family? You know, I'm pulling you away from your family and not even giving you an opportunity." And so he said, "Go back and minister and help your family with this." Verse 21, "And he returned back from him, and he took a yoke of oxen and slew them and boiled their flesh with the instruments of the oxen and gave unto the people, and they did eat." And so he took his plow and his yoke, and he broke it up. He set it on fire, took the oxen that he was using, and he prepared them, and he had a going away party right then and there. And so he arose and went after Elijah and ministered unto him. And so as we look at this in the context of what God is doing here, God is putting a mentor and a mentee together. He's putting someone with some age, with someone who is younger, and someone who's going to fill his spot, and he's putting them together. And so the first thing I want us to understand is this: the choice is not ours, it's God's. The choice is not ours, it's God's. And I think sometimes we get in this mindset where we say, yeah, I really do need to do that. I need to have a Paul. I need to have a Timothy. And we get so caught up in it that we latch on to people for the sake of having a Paul and a Timothy. Do you understand what I'm saying? It can almost put us in an awkward position, you know, where you just grab somebody and you're just like pouring into them, and it's not natural. It's not smooth. It becomes very socially awkward. That was not what was going on here. God made the choice for that. And so we have to understand the choice is not ours, it's God's. Who I mentor is ultimately not my choice. Should I seek to pour into someone? Yes. But really where that relationship and who that relationship ends up with is not my choice, it's God's. Somebody to pour into me, it really isn't my choice, it's God's. But we have to let God work that out. I mean, think about it. God sent Elijah to Elisha. Neither had a choice in the matter. Obviously, Elisha was not plowing his fields and working on his farm and saying, "Boy, I hope I can travel with Elijah one day." You know, that wasn't his thought. He was going about doing his business. And that wasn't in his thought process. And we know it wasn't in Elijah's wheelhouse. Why? Because Elijah was going, "I'm the only one." And so here God puts these two men together for a purpose. And I'm sure iron is sharpening iron here. We need to understand this. Many times God puts these relationships together in places of service. God puts these relationships together in places of service. So, how should my attitude be if I truly want to mature in my faith, if I truly want to build in my heart, my mind, vision for the future, and I want to be a faithful church member, I want to be a faithful servant of the Lord, how do I approach those circumstances? How do I approach serving? Well, I need to understand that those relationships many times happens in the place of service. So when I end up in a place of service, I shouldn't gripe or complain or take it personally if I'm put in a place of service where I am set under, where I'm put under. Why? Because God has a relationship there. It may be for that point in time, or it may be a relationship that develops. At 13 years old, I had no clue that the new pastor who came to our church would be a lifetime mentor. I had no clue. When my family moved away, I figured that was the end of Pastor Airwood and Troy, Ohio, and that, you know, we're going to be in North Carolina now. But that wasn't God's choice. God brought us back to Troy, brought me back to Troy. He put me under Pastor Airwood's leadership. That was definitely not my choice, because my mantra through my senior year of college was, I will not go back to Troy. And believe me, I looked all over the place, and it wasn't even near Ohio. But that was God's choice, and God put me there. And then when Pastor Airwood was called away to Indianapolis, I thought I was going to be in the senior pastorate and begin looking at that. And then God put me with Tim Berlin in Logansport, and that was a wonderful relationship. I could pour my life into young people, but I had, we're only 4 years difference in age, and so it was like two brothers serving together in a ministry and just having fun with each other. And uh, And so God gave me a wonderful relationship with Pastor Berlin. In fact, I am hoping that you will get to meet him in April. I've asked him to come and be a speaker for our sportsman's banquet in April of next year. And you will love him to death. You'll understand why I loved serving with him and just the joy of it. But God gave me that relationship. It wasn't by choice. I wasn't looking for Logansport. I was looking for a senior pastorate, but God had me there for a purpose. And it was even beyond Tim Berlin. But part of it was to meet Tim Berlin and to have a peer relationship, a Barnabas type relationship, with one another. And so God put me in that place. And again, I knew when we first met, he drove to Dayton and I drove down to Dayton and we sat at Bob Evans and, I watched him drink coffee as I was drinking coffee. And I'm like, he's not going to drink more coffee than I'm going to drink. And so every time he got his cup filled, I got my cup filled. And, I think he told Michelle on the way home, this has got to be the right guy. He drinks as much coffee as I do. It was just a fun time. And then God took me back down to Indianapolis with Pastor Arrowood for another 7 or 8 years. He's poured his life into me. And so we have to understand that God puts these relationships together in places of service. Elisha was doing what he was supposed to be doing. Elijah was now living in obedience to the Lord, doing what he was doing, and God put them together. And so when we come to a place of service, when we take a place of service or we're assigned to a place of service, don't look at it as what should I have done or what could I be doing, or look at it from the aspect of there is someone that God has me there to be with, to have some type of influence. It may be a Barnabas, it may be a Paul, it may be a Timothy. It may be for that time, or it could be a lifetime. And so go into those situations with eyes that are looking from that perspective. Be interested in the lives of others. When God puts you with somebody that you don't know, I know that that's awkward. You know, not all of us are, someone who doesn't know a stranger. Now, I, for me, that's awkward. And that's why I prefer being with somebody that I don't know in a service setting, in a work setting. Why? Because we have to work together. It forces me to communicate and to talk. Now, my brother Bo, if he could be mayor of Ocala, Florida, he would probably be mayor of Ocala, Florida, because he does not know a stranger. I mean, he came home one day when he was probably 8 years old, 9 years old, and mom and dad were like, "Bo, where have you been all day?" "Oh, I've been at Skip and Nancy's." "Who is Skip and Nancy?" "Well, you know, the Estes live here, and if you go around the street and go behind, Skip and Nancy live behind the Estes, and boy, we had fun. We played in the backyard, and they fed me lunch, and they're going, "We've never met these people before. Who are they?" But that's just Bo. He doesn't know a stranger. And you know, the crazy thing about it is Skip and Nancy actually keep up with him and sent him graduation cards and congratulations for his kids. And it was this older couple. They didn't even have kids. But, you know, and so some of us may be more like that. But be interested in the lives of others. Learn about where they're from. Learn about what they think, how they see the world. Be sensitive to the place the Lord has put you. It may be a workplace that he's put you. Be sensitive to that place. Be sensitive to the people the Lord puts you with. Be willing to be mentored. sometimes we get in a place where somebody may have experience that we don't, or may have a perspective that we don't, and rather than hearing from them, because they may be close in age, or they might even be younger, or they may be older, and you know, we feel a generation gap, we look at them cross-eyed rather than just listening. And just being willing to have some input put into our lives. So be willing to be mentored. Be willing to see a future generation. All right? The older we get, the more we look cross-eyed at younger generations. The more we look at them, and in fact, I've said this a million times, for an older generation, change equals what? For the older generation, change equals compromise. It's just, it's in the mind, we can't do that way. We ain't never done it that way before, right? For the younger generation, change is some freshness and some life. All right, which one is wrong? Which generation is wrong? They could both be wrong, or they could both be right. Okay, so what's important? That we look beyond a generation gap and that we hear both sides of it. I always told the college students in class, it would be the most fun thing in the world to be in a church of all 25-year-olds. I said, but it would be a hot mess. Why? And they agreed. Why would it be a hot mess? Because you're still at a place in life where it's like, yeah, let's just do it. You know, that sounds great. Let's try it out. Let's have. What do we need? We need a mix of that, right? We need that mentorship. We need that hoary head who has a little bit of caution about them. You know, when Paige wanted to bungee jump off that bridge in South Africa, my gray hairs were just tingling all over the place, you know, wanting to say that's probably not the smartest thing in the world to do. But she did it, and it was a great experience for her, and it was a good experience for me to trust God that bungee cords won't break. And so be willing to see a future generation. Just remember, the choice is not ours. The choice is God's. Keep our eyes open. You know, don't get so tunnel visioned, and we can do this with so many things, where we can get so tunnel visioned that we're latching onto people and we're creating awkward situations and relationships. Let them develop organically. Let God do His work. Now, look at the second thing. Be willing to fulfill your calling. Be willing to fulfill your calling. Now, we can look through the New Testament. We have all kinds of callings in the New Testament. We're walk worthy of the vocation wherewith we are called. And again, that's not about our job. That's about who we are as believers, who we are as church members. All right? And this is part of our calling. And so let's look at Elijah's perspective here. Elisha's perspective. We've got to be willing to be a servant, all right? Whether we're going to mentor, whether we're going to be mentored, whether we're going to have a Barnabas situation, we have to be willing to be a servant. We need to be serving. And that's the number one thing in fulfilling our calling within the body. Are we serving, and are we active within the body? Not just am I holding a title or am I doing a thing, but am I a part of the body that is interacting with the rest of the body? And so here is Elisha. Elijah comes up and puts the mantle on him. What does that mean? When he throws his mantle on the shoulders of Elisha and he keeps on going and he's hightailing it down the road, what did he just tell Elisha by putting that mantle on him? Huh? Yeah, but there's a first part to it. It's a calling. He's going to him and he's saying, you are going to come and train under me. You're going to take my place one day. Now, that's a wonderful thing, again, for us to have a perspective. I've watched this. It happened in my home church, and I'm so thankful for the ministry of Pastor Duff. Pastor Duff pastored for 33 years in my home church, and he was a great man, a phenomenal preacher. He was a man who had a sharp mind for eschatology, but he just held on to the pastorate too long. And he knew that once he got down to the end of it. And so, you know, we have to have a perspective in these kind of relationships that I'm expendable. We're all expendable. All right? And I don't mean this in an unkind way, but if tomorrow any one of us were not here, would we feel it within the body? Yes. But would the body go on? It would. And so we're all expendable. We all are going to be replaced someday. Why not take the perspective of, I'm going to throw my mantle on as many people as I can, or if I'm in a specific position, I'm going to throw my mantle on someone so that they can take my place. I want to pour myself into people that are going to be able to take my place. And that's what Elijah was saying when he comes to Elijah, or Elisha. It requires all you are. I mean, consider this. Elisha was from a prominent family, a farm that big. I mean, that's like having that, I don't know, those, you know, big old road-sized John Deere tractors, you know, that's got the tracks on them rather than the wheels with the massive plow behind it. I mean, in essence, that's where Elisha was in the field. They had a big old tractor plow made up of 12 people. And so he's from a prominent family. And he understood what the mantle meant. Not just the fact that he was called, but the fact that he was going to have to give it all up. He was going to have to set it aside. He's going to have to put it in God's hands. He understood that it was God's plan. But beloved, isn't that really where we are anyway? I mean, think about it. When we come to Christ as a sinner, what do we have to do? We have to recognize that God's way is right. And all that I have, and all of who I am, and all of the things that I love, and whether good or bad, all of those things I have to give to him. And my sin I have to give to him. And he's going to change me. You know what? As I function within the body and as I serve others, and as I seek to be a mature believer, as I seek to be a faithful Christian, what should my life look like? It's all his. You know, it's hard for us sometimes because we live in a society where sometimes the capitalistic view that we have, the American dream that we have, can get skewered, and we begin to say, that's mine, I earned it. Oh, really? Is it yours? Or is it God's? He gave it to you. And so being a servant, whether we're mentoring or whether we're being mentored, it requires all you are. Being a mature believer requires all we are. It requires that we count the cost. Think about it. What did Elisha do? He broke apart his plow and his yoke. He set it on fire. He slew his oxen. What did he do? When God said, here's a direction that you're going, he was all in. That's what he was saying. I am all in. Don't need these things anymore. And so when God gives us those opportunities, as we serve, as we seek to pour our lives into others and to have others pour into our lives, we need to be all in. We need to be all in, not because we want to be or because it's a hype, but because we know that that's God's design. And that's how we grow. And Elisha counted the cost. He knew he was going to have to say goodbye. He did all those things and he kissed his parents goodbye and he went after Elijah. It requires that we be willing to serve in anonymity. You know, again, that perspective of going in and being selfless wherever I'm placed in service, wherever God puts me, maybe in a job or puts me in serving others within the body. Let me read you this. 2 Kings 3:11. Elijah has passed on, and now Elisha has stood in his place. But notice this. But Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him?" And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, "Here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat," notice this, "which poured water on the hands of Elijah." He was still seen as the servant of Elijah. From this point in chapter 19, we don't see Elisha until right up at Elijah's death. 7 or 8 years, he served in anonymity. He washed the feet of Elijah. He watched what Elijah did. He cleaned the tent of Elijah, if he had a tent where he was staying. He followed Elijah wherever God sent him. That's what he did. Nobody spoke the name of Elisha. It was Elijah. He was the one who was in the forefront. You know, sometimes we need to step away from our pride and put some humility within us. You know, here's this young man, prominent farmer, probably had a successful life that could have been lived and well provided for. What did he do? He set it all aside. He humbled himself and he went with this man who was in camel hair and a guy of the wilderness, and he followed after him, and he served him. And so it requires that we be willing to serve in anonymity. Think about this. What would be better? Well, let me phrase it this way. There are going to be people in heaven who none of us have ever heard of, whose name one day will be spoken. And we're going to say, "I had never heard of that person," but we're going to find out and realize that they influenced and touched countless lives. That they realized, "I don't have to be the guy up front. I don't have to be in a place where I have a prominent position. I don't have to be recognized. It's more important that I pour my life into people and that people pour their life into me." I mean, you know, D.L. Moody, great preacher. But I wonder if one day, and not to take away from his ministry, if there will be people whose names will be spoken who will have a far more vast ministry than D.L. Moody had, simply because they humbled themselves and they were willing to serve in anonymity. And so Elisha's perspective as a servant is so important. But look at Elijah's perspective. Number one, it requires a willing vision for the future. Look at verse 16, the last part of it. It says, "And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, shalt thou anoint to be prophet," what? "In thy room." Elijah knew he would not be there forever. He knew that Israel needed an Elisha. He knew that he needed an Elisha to keep him encouraged and to give him some longevity. You know, I think sometimes we hold a position because we want to hold on to it, and we don't realize how quickly time passes. And then we end up holding on to it too long, and we've never poured ourselves into anybody to fill the gap. I wonder, and I've been in my fair share of churches in the last 20 years, visiting and ministering, whether traveling group or whatever. But I wonder if part of the things that we are suffering in our churches today with people walking away from church is because we have a generation or generations that have refused to have a vision for the future. That we've refused to pour our lives into somebody. It is easy for us to say, I'm 30 years old or I'm 40 years old and I have plenty of time. But I am learning more and more day by day how quickly that time goes, right? Those of us in here with the more gray hairs than others, it moves fast, doesn't it? And so it requires a willing vision for the future. If I'm going to pour my life into somebody, I need to look beyond right now. I need to look beyond what I feel, what I think, and I need to look to the future. It requires a realization that you can't make. You can only mentor. And this is so important as we get into our older generation and as we pour into the lives of the younger generation. Look back at verse 20. And Elisha left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow thee." And he said unto him, "Go back again." What had happened? Threw his mantle on him, and boy, Elijah's down to business, right? I've got my mentee. I let's head down the road. He had to realize that this was another human being, a younger human being, a person who had a life, a person who had a perspective. And he had to realize that he couldn't make him come, that he could only mentor him. Couldn't make him follow. What did he have to do? He had to be sensitive to the needs of his family. He had to be sensitive to the life that he was touching. He had to be sensitive to the fact that he had spent years as a prophet, fancy free and footloose. He could go anywhere where God wanted him to go because he could just pick up and go. And now he's going to have a second person that is a part of his life and a part of his growth cycle. And that's going to change everything. He couldn't make him. He could mentor. And then finally, it requires being willing to have life interrupted. Elijah would have to change and adapt. Elijah would have to answer why. The older we get, aren't those why questions a little frustrating sometimes? Because we've been around the block, and you've got a 20-year-old saying, "Well, why?" And you just want to say, "Well, I've been around the block more than you have." But you know what? The why questions are important. They're important for the discussion. They're important to pour ourselves into people. Sometimes we have to even be willing to share parts of our lives that we failed. We don't like to share our failures. But you know what? A younger generation, a generation that we pour ourselves into, needs to hear our failures sometimes. Elijah would have to develop patience. And Elijah would have to be willing to change his perspective. Not to change it from truth. Not to change it or turn it from God. But you have to be willing to change his perspective. And see that things through his eyes aren't seen the same way through Elisha's eyes. We won't look at it and eventually we'll get to it. But I think that as Elijah grew into his mentorship, he did a phenomenal job, especially when you look at the final account of Elijah and Elisha being together. And I think Elisha grew because of Elijah's influence. And there was a great respect that was in the heart and mind of Elijah, or Elisha, for Elijah. And I think it was even vice versa toward the end. But I hope as we've looked at these things, that our heart has been challenged, that our vision has been stirred, and that we won't just look at this story as God putting another man in another man's spot, but that we would look at it from the perspective of who we are as a body and who we are as a church family, and how we can grow, and how we can, and looking for ways to bring people into the body, not to grow in number, but to pour our lives into people, to see people won to Christ and discipled. And so may God help us as we process through this, and may God give us vision and perspective that is looking for those opportunities. And when He gives them, let's capitalize on them, and let's see our culture change and grow in a right way as we fulfill the function of the body. All right? Let's take just